So I was reading Dear Abby the other day, you know, the syndicated advice column, and I learned something I'd never heard of before. There was a series of letters about a woman who was getting married, the worried bride-to-be. Didn't know how she was going to get down the aisle since she had spina bifida. And this inspired a flood of Dear Abby letters as people shared their own stories about disabilities of different kinds. And it included this letter from Stephen Redmond of Morgan Hill, California. Dear Abby, may I suggest another way for worried bride-to-be to look at her disability? In the early 1900s, he writes, the New York Giants baseball team had a pitcher named Luther H. Taylor. He was a deaf mute who was, in an era of insensitivity, nicknamed Dummy. Taylor lost a lot of games due to his inability to communicate with his teammates. John McGraw, the manager of the Giants, was under enormous pressure from the team's owner, the fans, and the sports writers to trade Taylor. Instead, he writes, McGraw required the entire Giant team to learn American Sign Language. Once that was accomplished, McGraw used hand signals to lead his team. That's the origin of the hand signals that are used in baseball today. Rather than be embarrassed about her disability, worried should find a way to use her special abilities. Joining us now is Josh Prager. He's a writer for the Wall Street Journal. He's writing a book about baseball. And, Mr. Prager, we called you because I want to know, is this story true?
Well, that story may be true, but it's certainly not the birth of hand signals in baseball. It may be true that Mr. McGraw had his team use these signals, but they have been around almost as long as baseball, going back into the late 1800s.
But in your research, there actually is a deaf person who had something to do with the evolution of hand signals.
Yes, there was a man named William Hoy, who unfortunately was named Dummy because he was unable to speak with his teammates. And he was involved in the use of hand signals with his third base coach. What happened with him was he played in 1885 for a team in Oshkosh, and he could not hear the umpire's calls. And whenever the ump would call whether the pitch was a ball or a strike, he would turn around to read the man's lips, at which point often pitchers, never one to miss an opportunity, would quick pitch him, that is, pitch again before he was ready. And as a result, Hoy batted just .219 in 1885. Soon enough, he asked his third base coach to signal to him whether the preceding pitch had been a ball or a strike. And as a result, he batted .367 in 1887, and the use of signals was thus launched by the third base coach to the batter.
But that was not the only origin of baseball hand signals.
Basically, the 1880s was when hand signals in baseball began to flower. Until 1887, batters could request from a pitcher whether the pitch would be high or low. And until 1883, pitchers pitch underhanded, and catchers received the pitch many feet behind the batter. And so pitchers and catchers were much less adversaries of the batter than simple accessories of the game, like bats or bases. They were simply there to serve up this pitch, which the batter would then
try to put it in play in
exactly.
some fashion.
Exactly. But then what happened was suddenly there were changes in the rules, and pitchers were able to throw overhanded, and catchers moved up just behind the plate. And with the further rule change that batters could no longer ask the pitcher to throw a pitch high or low, catchers and pitchers had to communicate. There were men like a man named Malachi Kittredge, a catcher on Chicago, who would start to wiggle their fingers, telling the pitcher what to throw and where to throw it.
So not quite as simple as it seemed in the Dear Abby letter, but there's something there.
Yes, there is something there. And in fact, there was a team, a great Baltimore team in the 1890s, a team that had players like John McGraw and Ned Hanlon and Huey Jennings. They began to create plays like the hit and run and the squeeze. And with those plays, signs took off between the batter and the base runner. As a result, sign stealing took off as well, because now that signs were a big part of the game, people did their darndest to try to steal those signs.
Josh Prager is a senior special writer at the Wall Street Journal, and he's writing a book about sign stealing in 1951 and the shot heard around the world, the famous Bobby Thompson home run. Mr. Prager, thanks very much for speaking with us.
Thanks very much for having me.